all this time, Porter, everything you've done, everything you've said, I've heard all about. So you've made some remarks in the past about when is Papa Fritz going to be here. Papa Fritz is here.
With Kelly and Johnny. Kelly, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great as always, bro.
That is awesome to hear, man. Johnny, how's it going? How's life treating you?
I'm having a good day. I'm home. I'm away from being out on the front lines of this crisis. You know, squirreled up here in my little studio / bedroom. It's a good place to be.
Awesome. That's just good to hear, man. Good to hear. And you guys, is temperature going good?
Oh, yeah. I'm checking it all day long. In fact, I go to so many different places for my job that half of them are taking your temperature as you arrive. So,
yeah, I got to get my temperature checked when I get there. I have to answer the Q&A, and I got to do a Q&A for all the vendors who come into the building.
Yeah, I don't mind
checking their temperature, but.
Yeah, I don't mind it except for the places that want to do it rectally. I mean, it's kind of a pain in the ass.
Yeah, no, I do that joke. I'm like, all right, good. They go, are you taking my temperature? I'm like, yeah, man, just bend over real quick. And they're like, what? And they look at me. I'm like, I'm fucking with you, brother. I don't do that to the females, you know.
Oh, no, just
that
the
can get
just
me in
the,
trouble.
Oh, no, just the males. I see.
I can sexually harass.
Yeah, you can sexually harass the males.
Oh, God.
Hey, you might meet somebody. Come on.
Man, this is January 21st, 1984. There's a lot going on in this episode. I mean, we get Rick Rudd, and we'll get to it later, but you guys can guess which job or future star this is. We get some stuff with Adams and Sunshine, and if you want to shine up some baby faces, the two main events of the show. The baby faces take about 70 to 90% of the match. So, on both matches. So the baby faces are standing tall in these matches. But let's get right to it, man. We get Kamala versus Rick Rudd. Kelly, can you tell us about Rick Rudd?
Yeah. Well, I'll just go off the top of my head. Excuse me, with Rick Rudd. So this is Rick Rude, and he had a few different spellings of his last name when he started. Isn't R-O-O-D his legit last name spelled like that? Rude, yeah. So he used that, and then Rudd for whatever reason here. I think this was the only place world class that he used the Rudd surname. I could be wrong, but I think it was. He was in, I believe his first territory was the Carolinas in 82 as an underneath guy. He was in Vancouver. There's footage out there of him in Vancouver. And he was in Georgia. He was in Mid-South. He did basically the tour of the South. And here, he's only a couple weeks from debuting in Memphis, which was the territory where he got pushed for the first time. So we're seeing, we're seeing Rick Rudd at the very end of his jobberdom. Here is the hitch that he had the 2-year jobber hitch that he had to play, and yeah, so it's cool because yeah, this is it. In world class for him. He's just got this one match as far as I can see. So it's against Kamala.
And he's doing a babyface role, which
yeah.
is not normally his forte. I mean, he's been a heel his whole career. I mean, eventually he might have been able to play face. Even here, you're looking at him like, there's no fucking way this guy is a babyface jobber. Yeah. He's too good looking. He has too good of a body. Still bumps well, but it's just it's so weird to see because he really didn't connect to the bit. I mean, they gave him the cheers because he's, you know, he's the good guy versus Kamala. Mm-hmm. But, man, he didn't really connect with the crowd as a babyface here. It wasn't his natural habitat, if you will.
Right. No, that's true.
There's the words with Kamala.
And, yeah, because he was basically a babyface jobber the whole time in the previous 2 years. And was, yeah, just a – I mean, he had – yeah, you can see the body was there. So he stood out in that regard. But otherwise, he was just kind of a face in the crowd, regular babyface jobber. But, yeah, I mean, here – but Mercer drools all over Rudd's body and looks. So it was pretty obvious mm-hmm. that he was going to be a star. And, like I said, it's just – a couple weeks from him debuting in Memphis where he would take off. But in this match, he gets about 10 seconds of offense before being totally squashed by Kamala. But this was neat because I didn't know this was going to come up, this match, or that Rick Rudd was going to make an appearance. So it was a nice little surprise.
Yeah, the only thing that really stood out to me was, A, that, I mean, it shouldn't have surprised me because Rudd was always a good bumper, and he bumped well for Kamala. And Kamala teasing the Atomic Splash. That was pretty cool. Didn't get it, but it was a nice little tease. Johnny, what about you, man? What do you want? Anything you want to throw some shade on this match or anything?
No shade. But when I just saw it, they said Rick Rudd. It didn't hit until like a little spark in the back of my head went, Rick Rudd? And I'm like, is that going to be? And then I saw him. Like when the shot cleared up. I was like, that's fucking him. That's Rick Rude. I was like, this is cool. You know, I had no idea. And so again, he was on his way from somewhere. There was a layover in Dallas and he wrestled one match and then got on the plane and went to Memphis. There's something to that theory. But
you know, actually that theory sounds really good when you think about it, because he was working in Louisiana and stuff. So I can easily see him doing a going into Dallas into Memphis.
Yeah. I'm glad you agree with me, Pete. See, that wasn't even a joke. I think I'm on to something. But yeah, there were cheers. They were cheering for Rudd because, you know, that's fucking Kamala, man. And there's a handsome young white man in there. And that was some white power cheers for the unlikable Rick Rudd. Because you're right. I mean, he looks like a bad guy. But I thought he was already good. You could tell he was ready. And the reason I could what jumped out to me, let me put it that way, what jumped out to me was after Kamala beats him and does the splash on him onto his back, he sells there for a while afterwards. He's kind of like, and he's grabbing at Bronco's pant leg because he's in so much pain. Like, help me. And I'm like, that's a cool little touch. Your normal, you know, ham and egger jobbers don't do shit. That's a cool touch. I caught that. And I'm like, there you go. You know, that shows that he's got he's getting the performative aspect of wrestling down. And because when it came down, when Rude was at his best, he was so performative in the ring. He's the way he would sell getting hit in the nuts and the facial expression,
the
atomic drop. Oh, you know, he was performative and sold it to everyone in the arena. Yeah, it was one of his great skills. When people were like, Rick Rude was okay for a while, and then he wasn't. I was like, he never lost that. He never lost that showmanship. So I always thought Rude was amazing because I like a guy who can play to the cheap seats.
You know, Rick Rude's actually really interesting because if you look at it, he was a guy actually almost perfect for the time because, you know, in the 80s and early 90s, it was more character driven. So a heel like Rude, who could bump, had a good look, had a character, could get over. And you didn't have a whole lot of great offensive moves when you really think about it. But nowadays, moveset, and I put that in quotations, has become such an important thing in modern wrestling. Is a guy like Rick Rude, I don't know, would have gotten over in because he wouldn't be calling him a guy who had these great work rate matches, but he was a guy who could get himself over, get his character over, do a good promo. I mean, he clearly one of the most arrogant guys who came across as arrogant in his character. But he wasn't this guy who had a bunch of movesets and he stood out because of what he did. So he's a classic case of a guy who I really don't think would have gotten over in 2018.
I disagree 100%. I think if you took 1989 Rick Rude and dropped him either into AEW or WWE right now, he'd be instantly more over than everyone else because he knows how to fucking wrestle.
That's I will say one thing, though. He might be able to get over in AEW doing like an MJF because he's better than MJF doing that. But I think because work rate is such something that's so emphasized now, I don't know if he'd ever become this star. I don't think he'd be a bigger star now than he was in 1989.
It's interesting. We're going off on our Rick Rude tangent here. Right. This is the show. Here's the thing. MJF isn't either, but he's super over because he gets it. And Rude was the perfect example of guy who got it. And when you have a guy who gets what wrestling really is, and it's not about the moves, it's about – he's a bag. Of course he should only have a fucking – you have the Rude Awakening and, you know, a couple of moves, and then he cheats. That's what bad guys do. And
yeah, just like Ric Flair. Like, talk. People bitch about Ric Flair not having enough offense. Yeah, like, he's a heel.
But here's the other thing why Rick Rude would be totally over nowadays, because Rick Rude could talk. No one else could – people can't talk anymore, and it's a lost art.
They also might give him a shitty ass gimmick, and
it's
never going to find out for sure. But
well, that's what I'm saying.
You take that position. I'm proud of you.
Well, what I'm saying is Rick Rude with his 80s gimmick of I'm a hot sexy guy, and I'm going to paint your old lady's face on my dick. You know, and he grinding around and getting on the mic and insulting people, calling them a bunch of assholes and fat slobs. Like that never fails.
Do you think you might be they wouldn't let him do that, but put like brandy on his tights then in 2020?
They totally would.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. Jake Roberts is the most over guy in AEW right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Rick Rude would be just fine.
Yeah, and he would have been trained differently and would have picked up the modern moves. You know, he wouldn't have had to become Kenny Omega, but he would have had enough to been able to work like a WWE NXT style.
Hey, I'm a Rude fan. I'm a Rude fan, but I mean, I'm curious. I mean, there's guys you can see. I just don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not sold on his argument.
But if you took those Ricky Steamboat Rick Rude matches from WCW and put them on any show right now, they'd be the best fucking wrestling on the show.
Yeah, that's a good
point. I think. Yeah. You know, and those were quote unquote work rate matches.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a way, but it was different work rate.
Better. It was better work
rate. Yeah, but there was a lot of working of an arm or working a rib or working a back. It's just different. Next up, we get a recap of the Adams-Garvin angle from last week. Good that they're playing that up. It leads us right into an Adam Sunshine promo. Interview time, Johnny. Uh-huh. Tell us about this, man. These two are both fired up here.
Oh, no. Here's the thing. Adams isn't fired up at first. I found this fact. Because, A, it was playing into who's the star of this fucking team?
Right.
Theory. It's Sunshine. And I don't know how much of this was improvised and Adams was getting pissed at the end of this. Because Adams is like going, he's like, you know, Bill, he tries and he tries. He's always coming after me. And I don't know what's wrong with the man. Why would he think about that? And Sunshine interrupts. She's like, hey, they need to be put away. And I mean now, Chris, we need to take care of them. And he's like, oh, I will. Okay, I will, but I just really don't know. And then she's pacing. And finally, and Adams is bumbling around, and she basically gets on the mic, pulls it out of his hand. She's like, Jesus, motherfucker, here's what we got to do. We have to fucking end him. We're going to fucking end him. She's trying to fire him up. And at the end, he gets fired up. Yeah, Now I've got to get. It's like fucking Ogre in Revenge of the Nerds. He's ready to go out and kill some fucking nerds.
So you kind of think Adam was feeling like a cuck at this point and was like,
because when he was doing this, daggers at the camera and Jimmy Garvin, he was staring daggers at Sunshine. He was like, shut the fuck up, bitch. I'm trying my best. But she fired him up.
I'm with you. I thought she did drag Adams into a good hate-filled promo. I don't say hate-filled, but passionate promo. We've seen elements of it, but we haven't seen it all the way. And it is pretty interesting that Sunshine really did to bring it out of him.
That's what it seems to me, because you know they didn't script this. It seemed like she as an acting partner dragged out the proper emotion out of her acting partner. That was amazing.
Yeah, he was like playing his character, which is the gentleman, and then realized, well, shouldn't be a gentleman at this point. And
right.
And I'm fighting for her honor too, so I need to be more than that. Kelly, what did you think, man?
Yeah, good stuff. Sunshine's awesome, you know. I love her. She called Precious a tramp. Sunshine is so great. And Adams had his best, like, 1984 cool jacket and hairdo look at this time. He's come a long way, baby. Remember when he first came into the territory? He was freshly off a head shaving from Buddy Rose in the Portland territory, so he looked like kind of a nerd.
Yeah, he had that awkward.
Yeah. So now he's totally.
Yeah, Mongol, a bullet look. And he's feuding with the Mongol.
Yeah, and then the Mongol feud. So yeah, he's doing pretty well now in early 1984, looking pretty cool.
And he has the accent. That leads us into Kevin Von Erich versus Jimmy Garvin. This is the match, one of the matches that I was talking about. Kevin took a lot of this match. Well, tell us about it, Kelly.
Yeah, well, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago and about Kevin, you know, being even worse than Bob Backlund at his most extreme as far as eating guys up. And I mentioned at that time, well, get used to it because it's a consistent thing going forward.
The drug, he's like hooked.
Yeah, he's hooked on it. Because, yeah, he's
hooked on the shine.
Hooked on the shine. That's a dangerous drug, that shine. That's worse than crack.
I'm just waiting for someone to hit me back is what I'm waiting for. Someone needs to step up to this Von Erich and hit me back. Yeah, mate, Chris Adams is going to oblige you, motherfucker, in just a couple of years. Smack.
Yeah. The Sunshine love continues. We get a huge We Want Sunshine chant before the match. Mercer just can't stop talking about wrestlers exploding all over each other, blah, blah, blah. The crowd, really.
Yeah, you know, he was at home with a bottle, with a thing of a Crown or scotch and a cigar watching, like, apartment wrestling or something, man.
No. He's watching this. He goes home, has a scotch, jerks off to himself, calling the matches.
Oh, God.
That's an exclusive from Johnny Starro. Johnny Starro's statements don't represent the view of the feed, but go on.
Yeah.
It's like me when I listen to my own podcast. I usually do it with a scotch, dude. And I'm jerking off.
Oh no, that should have been saved for the Patreon. That should have been saved for the $50 tier.
That's paywall. Paywall stuff right there.
But no, on PWO we give these things away for free. We don't charge for anything. Man. So back to the match. Yeah, Kevin's
a couple of donations.
Kevin Shine was just too long. The match was boring because of it. And Adams and Sunshine hit ringside. So they interfered right in front of Bronco, but that didn't matter. Kevin got the pin. Whatever. The crowd loved it. More just continuation of the Adams, Garvin, Sunshine, Precious feud. So, yeah. But the Kevin stuff, I mean, it's getting ridiculous at this point with the Shines.
Totally agree on that. And it really stood out here because the next match also has a big babyface Shine. But that makes sense because, folks, spoiler, Andre the Giant's in the fucking territory, okay? So he should be fucking kicking ass. And Ice is coming off a big hot angle. So he should be eating it up. Kevin Von Erich here, there's no reason should have taken 90% of the fucking offense. And fucking win. On top of it, I didn't find it boring because I thought Garvin Starling was pretty fucking great here. You know, Sunshine's chants were fucking huge. But God, Kevin just owns Garvin throughout. I mean, Garvin's essentially Kevin's bitch here. We have Kevin just eating him up. And then we get a hair pull and a precious distraction spot, which I thought was going to set up a heat. And Garvin does a couple arm bars and works the arm for, I'm not kidding, less than 45 seconds and misses a leg drop to the arm and misses, and Kevin's back in control. Adam and Sunshine are out, distract Garvin, and then we get the finish with Kevin winning. But God, he took at least 90% of the offense, and I'm probably lowballing it. It easily could have been 97% of the offense. But they do a good job because where the money is, they do a nice little tease of Sunshine Precious. So that was important because that prolongs where the money feud is. But God, Kevin just guzzled. This was a mauling, a fucking mauling. Johnny, man, what's going on? What do you think?
I guess I like maulings. I don't care. I like watching Kevin Von Erich do shit.
Jimmy Garvin's a chicken shit heel.
Yeah.
But the fact that he gave so much and then lost. Oof.
I don't defend it. I'm not gonna be like, oh, here's why it worked. I like it. It's one of those things in wrestling I like. But I'll tell you who the crowd likes is Sunshine. Because she's all over this. Kevin Von Erich almost doesn't matter in this match. Not really. Because it's all about Sunshine and Jimmy Garvin. But Mercer starts as this match is about to start. First, they announce Jimmy Garvin as the man with mirrors on every wall. Gorgeous, yeah. Jim Garvin. And I was like, I like that. That's good. With mirrors on every wall. With a match like this, I think you can sit back and enjoy this kind of match without an announcer. Can we? Please, can we, Bill? But apparently not. And then it's, we want Sunshine chants as soon as Garvin and Precious come out. And yes, all the screams that you're hearing are from girls and kids. You know, boys tend to boo. Everything, but they're cheering too. But there's a lot of kids and girls in that crowd. And they're all... We want Sunshine, and it dies down a little, and then it comes up again. We want Sunshine. They cut to the crowd, and they're all holding up black and white 8x10 glossies of Sunshine that they bought at the merch table, and they're waving their Sunshine pictures. She is over. You look up the definition of over. You look right here at this crowd in Sunshine. Wow,
that's a headshot on top of it.
Well, she's in a black shirt, and you see her from the waist up. She's kind of doing a little pose with her hand on her chin, like she's posing.
Okay,
in the
Sears. I'm thinking something different. Yeah, right,
like,
gotcha.
she's posing in the Sears catalog. It's something, and it's black and white. I'm sorry. Mercer calls Kevin a barefoot gentleman, or do you think Kevin? Gentlemanly as he is, like, yes, the barefoot gentleman who's beating the living shit out of this guy and not giving him an inch. What a gentleman. At one point, Garvin is screaming for mercy, and he's like, ah, ah, ah. And Mercer goes, I'll tell you one thing, Garvin does not sound like Pavarotti. Like, fuck you. The worst. Like, this crowd, I mean, maybe I misheard this, because I know this is a good Christian crowd. But I swear I heard them kill children and those younger ladies briefly. Precious sucks. Precious. I'm like, that's a little filthy for the world class crowd. But you didn't really hear a lot. It was a lot of, I mean, they wanted the Freebirds to die, and the worst thing they chanted at them was "Go home." So they really hate Precious. And here's another thing I noticed. I was looking at Precious here, and Edward, I know I always thought Precious was really hot. She don't look that great here. This sounds terrible, you know, but as far as the aesthetic when I was a kid watching this, teenage kid. And then I remembered Missy Hyatt also. I remember maybe it's the makeup people in World Class or whatever it is, but I remember Missy Hyatt never dressed well. It never looked good. The makeup always looked bad. The hair looked bad.
World Class?
Yeah, World Class. And then she goes to Watts.
Way top heavy in World Class.
Yeah, very top heavy.
Morgana type stuff, yeah.
Morgana the Kissing Bandit. And she goes to Watts and she's a knockout. And then Precious, when they go to AWA is when I first saw her. And I remember being like, hey, she's hot. And when they get to Crockett, I thought she looked like $1 million. I don't know what it is about. Maybe it's 1983 or maybe it's World Class. But yeah, so there's your sexist moment for the show, everyone. I had to get that off my chest. And kids are chanting. We go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go on. Go on.
So kids are chanting, "We want the claw." There's all these little young children chanting, "We want the claw." It's perfect. This shot of them. And here comes Adams and Sunshine, and they cheat to help Carrie win right in front of the – Kevin win right in front of the ref. And Mercer goes, well, they certainly did cheat, but it's not like Kevin wouldn't have won anyway, so it's okay. He said that.
Oh, yes. Biases.
Wow. Bill Mercer literally – I'm going to repeat this sort of – points out, yeah – Chris Adams cheat. That's why Kevin won. But let's face it, Kevin would have just won anyway. What the fuck is that? That's insane.
And then we segue out, and it's really weird. It's like it seemed like there was like two different directions here because on the front of the show they tell us Andre's here, right?
But then last week they announced he was gonna be here.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this week they're shot it like it's a big secret.
Yep.
And there's no mention of him at all throughout the show. And then they tease us like this in a way, which, Johnny, go away. We can start off with the Parsons interview.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm glad you brought that up because I forgot to write that down. They've been announcing that Andre's going to be there for a while, and then they just shoot it like he's a giant surprise. The Iceman's like, "Ooh, I got a surprise for you, Super D's." And like, "Oh no, we all know. What are you doing?" It's oof. But anyway, actually, who cares? Andre's here.
Yeah,
and he's with the Iceman, and Iceman is like, "Man, Akbar, you put that fire on my face. And winning don't mean nothing. I got a scar for life and what I'm going to do to you." And then Bill Mercer says, "I understand you have a surprise for us." And Andre comes out and I just wrote down, "It's not a surprise. What's happening?" And Andre proceeds to tell Iceman that he's just on vacation because he says, "Oh, boss, I just got to stand in the corner, let you do whatever you want to." Andre's literally saying, "I'm not working tonight. Just gonna stand in the corner. You do what you gotta do, brother." But then he goes, "And after the match, then we go somewhere." All he says is, "There we go somewhere else." And I just wrote down the bar. Of course, that's what Hunter's gonna take Iceman out and get fucked up. And then Iceman's like, "You hear that, Akbar? Woo, I'm a coming for you." Outside of the logic weirdness of it's not a surprise, I like this. I thought it was fun.
Kelly, anything you want to add to this?
It's always cool to see Andre pop up in a territory because he was still making the rounds at this time, but it was coming to an end pretty quick after this. I think I looked it up when I watched this. I think September of 84 is the last time he goes outside the WWF, besides Japan, of course. But, right. Yeah. And he's obviously standing on something here because he's – this is the classic Andre where they try to make him look like he's 7'5", or he's standing on a crate or something like that, because he's towering over both Iceman and Mercer.
But, yeah, the way he weighs, I'm going to say he's standing on a stack of pallets or something.
Something like that.
Before we get to this, I thought this was a really fun Andre performance. It wasn't like a work rate, like him and Hanson having that great brawl in New Japan. But I thought this was a really fun performance, and you can see why Andre was such a huge star. And because the charisma just, I thought, just shot off the screen in this match. Kelly, why don't you talk about it?
Hold on, I have one question I want to ask before we move on. Now, I mentioned last show about the night my parents announced they were getting divorced, and I came back and I watched the World Class, and Andre was part of it. That wasn't this show, so he at least comes back. What I remember in my this was a long time ago, but I seem to remember. But I saw it was a hype thing with him and Carrie, and they were talking about Kamala. So does he stick around another week or come back soon and work with Kamala?
I'm quickly checking this. I should have marked this down when I watched it. Like I said, I looked it up, but I didn't.
The angle screamed that they were building or something between the two.
Yeah.
We know they work each other in WWF in 84.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they'd worked maybe in Mid-South already.
Drew good money in 84 with each other in WWF. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's what I remember that evening, seeing I just remember seeing the green World Class logo on Andre. I thought Carrie was with him, but it was definitely about Andre wanting to get his hands on Kamala. So.
Yeah, you know. No, anyway, well, let's maybe see. Yeah, I got it up now. Andre comes back in April, and there's a tag at the Sportatorium. Andre and Iceman Parsons against Kamala and the Missing Link, apparently.
That's probably what I'm thinking of.
He does come back again in 1984.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for solving that, Columbo. Right? Look, how quick was that, man?
I was doing my best Bix impression of quickly Googling something that I didn't know the answer of. So there you go.
There you go.
So I'll go on to the match. No, we don't need to make any jokes. So it's Andre and the Iceman versus the Super D's. I believe the Super D's have regained the tag titles from Iceman and the Human Sleeping Pill, Brian Adias, at some point. Although I'm not 100%.
Wow, they didn't really mention that at all.
You know what? That's something that just hasn't changed. That since we started this show, there's a lot of who's got the fucking tag belts. What?
Yeah.
There's a lot of who, what?
Yeah, that's true.
No, it's true, par for the course. I'm not sure. Anyway, Adias is nowhere to be seen, but that's for the better.
That's a plus.
That's a big plus. So the introductions by Lorenz for this match were hilarious. The Super D's are introduced as both of the Super Destroyers. Okay. No, that's very specific. Andre is introduced from Canada.
Canada.
Which, okay. He.
How proud were you, Kelly?
I was proud. Like, now I can claim Andre. Now I can claim Andre as being a Canadian wrestler. That's awesome.
It was on. Would Mark Lorenz is a youth pastor? Would he lie?
It's funny. Why would he have been introduced from Canada? I mean, he did co-own the Montreal territory at one point, and maybe
it's the goddamn everyone in Texas is so stupid. They probably think Canada is part of France.
Okay.
Wow.
I'll take that.
Those are the words of a Texan
territory.
Those are the words of a Texan who's been dealing with other Texans during this crisis. Wow, that was stiff. That was fucking stiff, brother. I was just about to say maybe Mark Lorenz was a wrestling geek, and he's like, well, I only recognize people by where they first got their big break in wrestling, and that was Canada for Andre.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point, Johnny. That's where he did start as Jean Ferry.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, in 1971-ish, I believe.
That was right after he was discovered in a forest by Billy Crystal, right?
I think that's how the story goes. Just a quick side note, I do have Andre the Giant's biography, the new one coming.
I heard it was great.
Yeah, it's being delivered on Tuesday, and it's supposed to be awesome, by Pat LaPrade and his partner. I always forget his name, I'm sorry. But they've done books together.
Yeah, they do a great job. They do a great. Yeah. They've always been really good. Sometimes almost too informative.
Yeah.
That's a negative.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm glad, Kelly, I'm glad you brought that up, because I've been looking for a book to read during this quarantine time. And that is, I've already heard it was great. And so I'm glad you brought that up. I'm buying that tonight because I really want something good to read.
Yeah, it's supposed to be awesome. It's like no stone is left unturned style biography, as far as I know. So it'll be really good. So yeah,
you need to reveal that Hogan slammed Andre before Mania 3 thing.
Yeah, I think they may finally reveal that.
That's the big story they're gonna bring.
Who slammed Andre first? That'd be a great one.
Yeah. I'm sure they'll go into that, because that's one of the main sort of myths of Andre. So
was Andre's dick as big as Ric Flair implied on the HBO special?
There'll be a picture of it in the middle of the book in the centerpiece.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that's worth the price of the book alone.
You get a free dick pic for a bookmark. With the book.
The bookmark is Andre's dick.
Jesus Christ. It's a good thing no one of importance ever listens to these shows, or we'd be shut down immediately. Okay, so let me quickly do the match here, because I've got to get going.
Did you hear that? Oh, wait. Did you hear that, all listeners? Kelly just said, none of you are important.
Well, as far as I know, there's no one famous, but, I mean, prove me wrong. Come on, send us some feedback. That I'd be pleased to see it.
Okay.
So, Andre, of course.
By feedback, he means not dick pics.
I don't want that. I'm not the Velveteen Dream. There's a topical reference for you. Although this one won't be coming out this week, so it'll be dated, but whatever. Andre, yes, he does all his signature spots, and the pop when he tags in for the first time is huge. Like, yeah, he's on another level of stardom for sure. And the D's finally get heat on Iceman, and then a hot tag to Andre. Things break down, and then Kamala attacks Andre. So, you know, and Andre actually disposes of him no problem at all. And then the post match is great, Johnny. You're going to go into this big time, I know, because Andre takes Akbar's headgear and he starts shining Iceman's boots with the headgear.
Yeah,
and then, oh my God. Iceman shines Andre's boots with the headgear. Yeah.
And very briefly, Andre brought Andre literally went, "Oh, boss, just look really racist," and then stopped it, because then he proceeded, no, to do the bump with Iceman. And he was like, right. "Oh, you're not doing this racist shit. What the fuck? No. You didn't get what I was going for here. You know, you don't have to do it to me. And now let's get down. Show them I'm funky." That's oof. When Iceman starts shining Andre's shoes, I literally gulped and pulled my collar, like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, like, can you imagine that happened today? Holy fuck.
Yeah, talk about not aging well. That's the dictionary definition of a wrestling segment not aging well.
Andre gets to the back. Boss, that was really fucked up.
Bill Watts wasn't involved, which makes it shock me even more shocking.
Bill Watts would have fucking yelled at them about that. What the fuck is wrong with you? Bill Watts and Ernie Ladd together would have gotten right up to him and they're like, what the fuck is wrong?
Oof. That's all.
Done, Kelly?
Yeah, I'm done. I can't follow that.
Yeah, I was digging this. I liked the crowd. Just wants Andre right off the bat. I thought the D's did a pretty good job shining up Ice. And now the Andre's turn. And now the Studing has really turned way up. I love the Andre stepping on the hand spot. Andre's version of the butt was fucking fantastic. The faces just dominating this match. And makes sense. You know, Ice is revenge. Andre's a big star coming in, so they need to, the Steez need to be selling, and that's what they did early on. Finally get a little heat here, and the D's work over Ice, but it builds well into Andre's hot tag, and which leads immediately pretty much to Kamala out with the big schmoz, and they don't do like an Andre versus Kamala match, it seemed like, but it should mean something if they didn't, like, fucking destroy Kamala booking so bad the last couple months where it's like, who gives a fuck? So we've seen Kerry slam Kamala. What the fuck's Andre gonna do to him? It just is like, are you kidding me?
People just like seeing this African man who's supposed to it being emasculated. They love it. They can't get enough
of
watching this proud black warrior be emasculated constantly. First by the Von Erichs, now by this giant French freak. Jesus Christ. That's what they
and
want.
Then, you know, we talked about the shoe shining, and I personally like the jive comedy shtick at the end of it.
The jive comedy part was great. The shoe shining part was not.
No, it was a different time. And it, you know, but it's...
What, 1926?
Yeah, it's a different time. I mean, hell. John, you were there still. I mean, I lived in the South. It was still pretty racial back in the 80s. So,
sure shot.
Again, I'm definitely not justifying that. But, yeah, I mean, back then it was bad taste. Now it's like, disgusting when you look back on it.
I know. What they did to Akbar's headgear, Akbar's proud Arabian headgear was desecrated by these Americans.
Which is even funnier when you think about it, but it wasn't so racially charged, the shoe shining bit. That's been pretty damn funny when you think about it, getting revenge on Akbar by using his headgear as a cloth to shine shoes.
I'm not kidding.
But also, But also, it's pretty just disgusting too.
What if the manager was
an evil manager, you know?
What if it was that manager Izzy Slapowitz and they used his yarmulke? That would have been terrible. Disgusting. Same thing here. Anyway, Mercer says that Andre's hands are like a whole meat locker. Like, ugh, you can't even get the Andre references right, you know, a side of beef, something like that. Yeah. But he does say, Andre has big puppy dog eyes, big soulful eyes, and I can look into those big soulful eyes and see the pain that a man of his size must endure. And puppy dog, he's Andre the Giant. You're talking about his giant soulful puppy dog eyes, you fucking moron. What the fuck is wrong with you? And then he's talking about how Andre likes to have fun because he's like a catfish caught on a line. Andre's having fun. I don't know who's – the catfish isn't having fun. I don't know. He's terrible. The crowd, though, is going nuts for Andre. They are loving this. And we are right at the point where Andre – look, I know that he switched to the singlet because of the back brace, but he needed to switch to that singlet a long time earlier, and this is right around that time. Andre's little tights became the most disturbing thing in wrestling. I'd watch Andre just his ass and his belly, especially his belly, just enveloped his tights like he was the Blob in Steve McQueen. He was not pleasant to look at. Here comes Kamala. And we already talked about the the shoe shine shit. But I thought this was a lot of fun. It's Andre comes to town. The heels better fucking just be getting bumped around like motherfuckers. It's Andre. And then, but he was selling. This was you're right, Pete. This was a fun Andre performance. This is right before he was completely broken down, and he put on totally a fun little show here.
Yep, totally understood the psychology, what they needed to do, how to get the match over, how to get himself over. It was tremendous, and yeah, it is a shame that the ending was so racially. You know, you'd love to see the evil manager get shown up, but you know what? What they did was racist, and then on top of it, they double raced it with a shoe shining spot. So I mean, it's not funny, but it's so bad. No,
it's hilarious. It's so I am sending this show Joey, my buddy Joey. His favorite thing is amazingly racist shit in old wrestling, and he's never seen this. So I have a treat to send him later on tonight.
Yeah, this is much worse than when Russo would always beat like Juventud over the head with a tequila bottle as his finisher thing when he was booking WCW. Man, on that note, man, I gotta say I enjoyed the show. I enjoyed Andre a lot here. I enjoyed that tag. I enjoyed again the furthering up of the Adams, Sunshine, Garvin, Precious stuff. It worked for me. And then seeing the young Rick Rudd. Future Rick Rude. I thought it was a fun show. Again, I wish the Kevin match he didn't eat take so much, because Andre needed to have the babyfaces take a lot of the offense. So Kevin's match felt really unnecessary. It would have been much better if we would have gotten the Buddy Roberts Mantel match on instead of that one this week.
You understand my genius, Pete. This is my genius. I'm addicted to the shine.
What about you, John? What do you think of him?
I had a lot of fun with the show. There was a lot of fun stuff because I like Kevin shit. I love Andre. I love touring Andre. So this was great. But it was the end here, though, where Bill Mercer actually appears amazingly drunk, because he says, well, on tonight's show, we found out a lot. Maybe the match will happen soon. Somewhere in Texas tonight. And he is pie-faced, drunk. It's fucking great. So that's a great way to end the show. I really enjoyed this one. There was a lot of fun shit.
Kelly, what about you, man? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said. Andre being here, that was, put a smile on my face for sure. And the Rick Rudd appearance was unexpected and pretty cool. So yeah, this was one of the fun shows for sure.
Awesome, man. Kelly, anything you want to plug?
Just the usual PWO Network, all the great shows. There's so many. There's too many to name now, really. So just check it out. Subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Network, and you'll be rewarded with a ton of free content and all kinds of outrageous stuff.
Yep, content is kids is key right now.
Yes.
Johnny, anything you want to plug, brother?
Gideon guys and me and Travis, because the show we're talking about is a very PG rated show. So our show is very family friendly, because I read that the only podcasts that are really gaining in popularity during the quarantine are children's podcasts. So I'm going to have to learn how not to say fuck every other. Nah, fuck it. That's not going to happen. So, but tune in, everybody.
That sounds like a learning curve that will never be curved.
I could I think I could pull it off.
I call bullshit. Fuck you. On that note, have a good one. See you next time around the bend. Bye-bye.
My heart aches and troubles are just up and gone. The moment that you come in view, and with your hand in mine, dear, I could dance on and on, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you in my arms. Texas with you. Like a storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas.